Okay, we are now to our final panel of the day, and this is the panel that is going to discuss the newest, the pending, and the hopefully soon to come new ethanol blend, E15. This panel is made up of Ron Lamberti, who is the Senior Vice President of the American Coalition for Ethanol. He did spend his first 20 years of his career in the convenience store and petroleum wholesale distributing business. So he's going to talk about blending your own ethanol and the consumer advantages to the product. So with that.
All right. Thank you. And thanks to everybody, you brave, hearty souls who have stayed for this. Hopefully we'll have some information you can use, and I think we'll have some time that you can ask questions. I think the heading of this thing talked about consumers and need to know, what consumers need to know about E15. And I think there's always this question about what they already know. And unfortunately for us, a lot of what they already know is wrong. Thought it was interesting that the slide that you see up here, as we talked about VTEC last year, most of us mentioned the fact that, you know, this is a tax credit that goes to the pumps. That's something that gives people a discount on their fuel. And yet, you know, nobody really took that. They figured, yeah, it's a subsidy. It's a big check that's written to somebody. And we kind of became the poster child for federal programs. And so now over the last week or so, we've seen stories like this one trickle out talking about how gas prices are going up. And that one of the reasons is that this tax credit for ethanol went away. And sort of the way they're worded and then the way they're reported was that somehow this is something that ethanol did, when in fact it's the exact thing that we told people would happen. It's a tax credit that went away. We have a lot of information out there about our product that's not well known, and sometimes, you know, you wonder how you're going to combat that, or whether you should, whether it should just be something that, you know, it's a product that adds octane, it's cleaner burning, it does a lot of other things, and right now refiners actually see the value of it and put it in their fuel because the octane works for them. They can meet the renewable fuel standard. And so there's plenty of reasons that people use it. Do we need to really battle that? And so we can get tied up sometimes in talking to people about things that, you know, trying to correct misconceptions, and we're all supposed to do that. We did a very informal study just recently about some different efforts that we might want to undertake at the American Coalition for Ethanol. And one of the things that we found out was that about two-thirds of the people that say they don't use ethanol also say that there's probably nothing we can tell them that would make them use ethanol. And ironically, though, on the other side of the spectrum are people who use ethanol right now who use E10, 80% of whom said they'd probably use E15 if it were available. So I think when we do get E15 out to the marketplace, one of the things we're going to have to make sure we tell people is that it's out there and that they can use it. What they need to know about E15, basically. It's the most tested fuel in the history of fuels in the United States. I believe 180 or 270-day turnaround that was supposed to be on this fuel. We're running up on 3 years here in another couple months. And so all of the tests have been done. It's been tested safe for the vehicles that it's approved for. And it's approved for and not required. There are so many people that we talk to in the BYO program that we do along with the Renewable Fuels Association. So many petroleum marketers we talk to, consumers we talk to, that think that E15 is a mandate. We'd like them to use it. We think most of them will, as we found when we put E10 into markets that never had E10. Once consumers try this kind of fuel, they like it and they continue to use it. But it's not required for anything. It's approved for anything 2001 cars and light trucks. That's what it's approved for. That's what we'd like to see people try it in. No stations have to sell it, and nobody has to buy it. That's an important distinction that I also don't think is out there. Again, when you hear news reports about it, they talk about E15 mandates. There's no such thing. I've read a lot of reports, this next one, a lot of reports about, well, and they've a lot of them come in the small engine sphere of different publications. You hear people talking about, well, we've had people report that they've had trouble with E15 in some sort of equipment. If they tell you that, they're lying. I mean, other than a couple of stations in Iowa that sell it as a flexible fuel, and maybe some more now in some of these other markets where we've put in some blender pumps, E15 isn't available anywhere. I mean, it hasn't been, all of the steps haven't been completed. It's not approved. And so people who talk about things that have happened with E15 are simply taking spook stories that they've heard in the media over the last year and saying that that's what's going to happen. Now, it's something that we expect there will be people who say those things happen once the whole rollout eventually takes place. But right now, that's just not the case. When you can buy it, this is the other thing we want to make sure people know. And when they can buy it, it'll be higher octane in most, we believe it will be. It'll be cleaner burning, and it'll probably cost less. Might not, but we expect that it'll probably have the same economic advantages that ethanol has right now as far as cost advantage. These are the list of things that we know that went away. Volumetric ethanol excise tax credit, the alternative fuels infrastructure credit, the secondary tariff on imported ethanol. Now, the USDA Rural Development announced a notice of funding availability just earlier. Was it earlier this week? It was Monday of this week that they've got some money available, and they will do blender pumps again. Everybody will be doing their parts of these different things, and we will do the same through the BYO program and then through, you know, American Coalition for Ethanol. If you contact us, if you're a station owner, we can walk you through that process, and I know IRFA will do the same. They had some folks that applied and that they helped out too, and I have noticed that all of the USDA offices are really eager to go with this program because they had good luck with it last time. The implementation update on E15, the one thing you get asked all the time is, when is it going to happen? I mean, we've got who can use it, and I don't have a better answer than you would have had last week or last month. There's the list of things that still need to be done, and some and are done in most cases, but there's a final ruling that will come out at some point, and E15 will be available at some point. I will say this. One of the things that we've been that I will give absolutely applaud Iowa for is that you saw this stuff coming a year and a half ago and took care of all of the different options that are out there, all of the different roadblocks that have been cleared here. And so I was just asked by someone out here in an interview, you know, what do you think will happen in Iowa? And I expect that when E15 is available, Iowa will be one of the first places that it's seen widely available to consumers because of the steps that you took to clear those roadblocks and to make sure that it's a safe fuel, that it's a fuel that all of these different pieces of rules and regulations that might stop people from selling E15, that those have been taken care of. And so I applaud you for that. And I do think once E15 is available, the first place you're going to be able to get it is going to be in Iowa. Common retailer concerns when we go to these trade marketer shows or trade shows and talk to marketers, and we'll hear whether or not this is we'll see if this is amplified. But what we hear about is, when will they be available? What about the summertime? The 1 pound waiver, that gets to be a pretty significant item. That 1 pound waiver that applies to fuel blends of 9 or 10%, but not 11, 12, 13, 14, or 15. In other words, in April to September of each year, you have to have 9 pound reed vapor pressure gasoline, a low vapor pressure gasoline. If you add 10% ethanol, it can be 10, or it can be 10 pounds. 10%, according to EPA, is 9 or 10. And even though 11 has less reed vapor pressure than 10, and 12 has less than 11, and 13, and 14, and 15 are all less than the ones before them, those aren't legal because it's not written into the legislation that way. So that can be a problem. It right now effectively puts a cap on some markets. ASTM has got some changes in their flex fuel specification that should help marketers who sometimes have to switch pumps and switch blends seasonally, maybe more than they'd like. And then there are bound to be new specs for things like, well, obviously E15 is the first one, but E20, E30, some other things that'll be out there. All of those are necessary so that consumers can know what they're getting meets the requirements of what they thought they were going to get, and so that a retailer knows that he's selling what he thinks he's supposed to sell. People ask us what blends will be viable after VTEC. We don't know. If prices stay where they are right now, one of the things that I thought I had put on that second slide, one of the things that people don't know is, right now ethanol costs less than gasoline. Everybody in this room knows that, but the general public, because they've heard all of these things about ethanol increasing prices, thinks that ethanol costs more. Ethanol costs less. What blends will be viable if the price of ethanol continues to be lower than gasoline? And with the steps that we have to go to get gasoline nowadays, that's likely, I think. If it continues to follow gasoline, then whatever blend your car can use that is highest will probably be the most attractive. Now, will they be viable? I don't know. Some people use them, some people won't, but we do have that opportunity. Certainly, if we're going to be selling a premium product at a discount, we need to promote the fact that it's available and that more people can use it so people will at least know that they have a choice and maybe take that choice a few times to find out how it works. How will customers know what fuel to use? There are no shortage of people that will help you label your pumps. EPA has a required label for E15 that's a blaze orange. They have required labels for E85, and so there should be little, there shouldn't be much trouble with people knowing which blend is there. The general public, most of them can read. Sometimes when they see signs on gas pumps, you don't know for sure whether they can, but in most cases, we tell retailers, make sure they're clearly labeled what those products are, and I can't imagine why marketers or consumers would have much trouble finding whichever fuel it is they want to use. Questions about liability insurance coverage. Again, I go back and applaud IRFA and the Iowa legislature for taking care of that, making sure that consumers have the responsibility to take care of their own vehicles, that if you label these things properly and clearly, that if a consumer uses it, knowing what they're using, that they have the responsibility for taking care of their own equipment. Keeping in mind, of course, that this stuff has been tested like crazy and it's not going to cause problems, but at least you've got to be able to make sure that people don't think they're going to have any, or that you put to rest some of those concerns that people have expressed over the years as you attempt to sell more of this fuel. And then available equipment funding. Different states have different programs. Iowa's is one of the best. The states around us, South Dakota, we just went on a tour with the Governor's Office of Economic Development there. They have a very attractive blender pump program. And as those things become available, we'll make sure, and as will, I'm sure, everybody else in the industry, make sure that retailers know about those things, because they're in an incentive business. That's how, when you brand a station, there are programs that help you pay for the branding. When you put certain merchandise in your store, if it needs to be displayed a certain way, there's people that help you do that. And we're in that business. We need to be able to help retailers display and sell our product. This is just some of the stuff we do through the BYO campaign. Others have different labels. I don't think there's a single petroleum marketer out there who is sitting on the fence saying, boy, I'd like to do it, but what I really need is stickers. I don't think that's what's keeping these guys from doing it. So, frankly, whoever's decals you put on these pumps doesn't make any difference to me. We want them to sell ethanol. If this will help, great. If they want to use some other ones, that's terrific, too. Make sure customers know what they're getting and know where they can get it, and I think that these people will continue to go there. If you've never seen a blender pump, I'm going to go over it very quickly. It was great that we had an actual standard blender pump out in the trade show. It'd be a better way to look at it there, but essentially this is no different than the blender pumps that were around 50 years ago and that are in use, where places where they have unleaded on one side and premium on the other, and they sold varying octane grades out of those hoses. Several years ago, some folks, and they'll debate whether it's northern Wisconsin or northern South Dakota, but they decided they were going to take their premium out and put E85 in and started blending that to make E10, E15, E20, E30. The market's changing there. In some markets in the United States, you can't buy straight gasoline anymore, so that may be E10 in one tank, E85 in another. There might be people that put E30 in one and E10 in the other, but either way, these newer pumps that are being sold now, that are most of the incentives are for, are pumps that are prepared to handle any blend of ethanol and gasoline that you can possibly sell. And going into the future, whatever chance there is, we know that marketers look at this, and in some cases, even whether they've been supporters or not, are saying, boy, if I can get a pump like this, a brand new pump that's upgraded, has all the latest bells and whistles, and I can pay less than I'd pay for a standard pump that doesn't do any of these things, why wouldn't I do it? that, you know, we'd like to have them be a little more positive and want to sell our product more than that. But if that's the only reason they do it, at least the product will be out there. And they will find, like everybody finds when they start selling E10 in new markets, or like they found when they started selling E10, that it becomes a consumer fuel of choice. And we think that'll happen as we add more blends. As a petroleum marketer, the advantages of putting this kind of pump in are numerous. More, you know, as I mentioned just now, you get more fueling options for people. Typically, you can use your existing tanks and pipes. There have been some discussion about that, but if you go to the Steel Tank Institute or Fiberglass Tank and Pipe Institute's pages, they list things that for the last 20 to 30 years where they've been compatible with blends of ethanol up to 100% ethanol. One thing that's very attractive is that, especially in the Midwest where ethanol is manufactured, that you can buy E85 directly from an ethanol plant. And there's typically some margin advantage there, that if you can go buy your E85 from the plant, buy your gas from your regular supplier, or for that matter, have your regular supplier handle both. But there's usually some margin advantage in being able to go directly to the supplier. I mentioned the flexibility so that any blends that come up in the future are there. The biggest one for most of the people that have used them over the last several years is that a standalone E85 pump cost the same as any other pump back when we started doing those things, and yet only a small percentage of the vehicles could use that and therefore would help pay for whatever somebody else didn't help you pay for. These pumps will sell any kind of product, and everybody, whether they're buying unleaded E10, E15, E85, or if you've got an extra product and you put premium on it, they all help pay for it. That's good economics. That helps sell the program. The turnover of the inventory is more similar to your other products. That was an issue with E85 where you'd buy it, it didn't sell very fast, and the market moved up and down pretty quickly, and you'd be in and out of the market with your E85 over time. In this case, because you're using it to make your other blends, it becomes more attractive to a marketer. And, of course, they're ready for E15. Now, before, I think I've only got one more here, but before I go on, it's important to know that when we started talking about E15 as an industry, one of the reasons E15 was chosen is because the Underwriters Laboratories specification at the time said that a pump that was approved for ethanol was approved for up to 15% ethanol. Again, and I think the Iowa legislation addresses this. We don't want to make people think that the only way they can sell E15 is through a blender pump, because in many cases, your local fire marshal or the authorities having jurisdiction wherever you are can allow you to sell E15 through a standard pump. As oil companies try to meet the renewable fuel standard, and many of them have talked about maybe not selling straight unleaded because they don't want to have to buy RINs, we may have a situation like we had when unleaded and regular went in the market and regular was being phased out. And as soon as regular got phased out, we found a lot of spaces for E10. This may be a situation where as unleaded regular is phased out and they've got E10, they may have that tank and that pump available for E15. So don't assume that you have to get new equipment to do E15. Other blends, that might be the case, but that also depends on different legislation or different regulations that you have. So these certainly, if you're buying a blender pump, those are certainly ready for E15 and any other blends that you might consider. The math of ethanol continues to be attractive. I know there's people, we're 24 days into the time where people said we'd never exist if it wasn't for VTEC, so we've made it that far. But as you can see, the economic advantages still exist. Just as an example, these are just national average prices. I think they were Chicago spot prices that I put into a chart put together with a tax figure that's kind of a national average. But these aren't real costs. They're just sort of, I mean, they don't have freight. They don't have markup. They don't have anything. These are just spot costs. But as you can see, E85 is still pretty attractive in this particular situation. E10, E15, E30. So there are advantages. Hopefully, as we have this price advantage, we'll do a good job of selling the other advantages, making sure that people understand, you know, it's an American renewable fuel. It's clean. It's clean octane. It's higher octane. It's all of the different things ethanol is. And while we have this price advantage, we need to make sure people know that they're buying a higher quality product at a good price. So with that, I will refer you Our website is ethanol.org. We're also, for petroleum marketers, if you send them to this byoethanol.com, that's geared towards petroleum marketers. Talks about things that they talk about, and thank you all for hanging around for this, and be happy to answer your questions when we're done with this. So thank you.